Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, everybody, let's hang tight and look for landing radar.
Flight guidance.
No guidance.
We'll need that landing radar by 18,000 with this soundtrack.
Roger.
On the pings.
Roger, I copy guidance. Okay, we got data back.
Radar flight looks good.
Roger.
2,000 feet.
Roger. 2,000 foot del H.
Hello, I hope we are on the air. I'm sorry, everyone, I got knocked off, accidentally hit the wrong control here, so I'm going to go ahead and connect up Kat, and I think we have, hello, Kat?
Yes.
I got knocked off the air, I'm sorry. So we're going to, an auspicious start to the police show. Anyway. Yep, so I had it all planned to play the intro right after, so I'm going to go ahead and play it, and we'll just act like this didn't happen.
That's right.
All right, here we go. We're going to play the Troops comedy parody. Here we go.
With the men of the Imperial Forces. All suspects are guilty, period. Otherwise, they wouldn't be suspect, would they?
Oh, my goodness. It's the the police show. We're going to be talking about police and the paranormal tonight. After Yeah, somebody cuffed me here, and I was actually, I felt terrible. I was sitting there messing with the phone, and I'm actually, to tell everybody what's going on, I'm building a new, the broadcast studio for GRI here, and I've got a sound mixer board, and I had hooked the phone into this switch box that I have kind of hanging the guts of it, or hanging out right now in the studio. Anyway, I didn't realize I still had it hooked up, and the show was getting ready to come online, and I went, oh, I wonder if that's, and I pressed this button, and I knocked myself off, and I went, oh, my God.
Is that why we haven't used it yet?
Well, it's going to be run through some tests. So
is that
anyway,
why I put my laptop on top of it instead?
Well, I don't know. I'm just rather mortally embarrassed. It's a horrible start to the show anyway. And finally, the new Lexmark printer I got, gave them a plug here, got them printing out some of the show notes, which were also going. So it's been a bit of a rough start, so let's just keep going. yeah, we've got a ghost on the road. Anyway, a lot of neat stuff has been happening here, in addition to all the official-sounding police stuff going on. We've got a new development here on the GRI portal. Oh, my goodness, the GRI portal.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yep, we have our own chat room. So for those if you go into the show page and you'll see the chat link, just where there's Kat's and my page and also the GRI homepage. There's also a new chat link. So anybody can just pop on in, type any name. There's no password needed. Just come on in and join the show and join the chat. Kat is moderating, and I keep an eye on things, too, from here now. And I think this is, although, you know, Blog Talk Radio, great people, great show. I mean, I love working with their software and all that. I kind of like this chat software just a bit better. And it's, oddly enough, there's another Blog Talk host out here, Christine, running her own similar show to ours, and she does a lot of EVP work, and she's a total pro at it. And she uses the same software for her show, and I just happened to run into the same package and started using it, and then was bopping around on her site and went, oh, you've got the same software I do. Cool. So it's tried and true for the paranormal crowd. So that said, go on in there, try it out, pop on in. You can even set up your own private chats and private rooms if you want to discuss things, and you can even trade files back and forth. So there's a lot to it, and we're giving it our first go today. But anyway, let's take a look at what's happening. You know the standard format. First half hour, we go through and talk about stuff that's happening this week. Maybe some EVPs that GRI went out and picked up out, in the field. And boy, did we get some. Kat and I.
We picked up some Class A EVPs.
Oh, yeah. We did a heck of a
job. For real.
Time. Yeah.
Like 30 of them.
We went out to the old Fairplay Cemetery, which is a gold rush cemetery, just like so many others out here, filled with folks from, buried since the 1840s and 50s right on, up to the current day. And also Shingle Springs Cemetery, which I've played EVPs here before from that, and picked up some pretty unique stuff in both of these places. And also we hit, what was that restaurant we went to? Oh, goodness gracious me. I'm trying to remember the name of it. We stopped and had that breakfast. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, the Gold Hotel?
The Diamond Springs Hotel. Yeah, it's
Diamond
a restaurant.
Springs Hotel.
Yeah, Diamond Springs Hotel. We went there, had breakfast
yummy.
For our day outing, and oh, yeah, it was a good breakfast. But
yummy.
We got some EVPs out and also in the parking lot. So if you go out to the GRI site, you'll spot some a few of those EVPs that we picked up just out in the parking lot, and we're going to be going back there and potentially doing an overnight investigation. So, stay tuned. I tend to think it's probably going to be in, March or April. So that's coming up. Some really good cases coming up for GRI. But for today, we've got some of these EVPs to play. And let me think here. Oh, we've got some paranormal links of interest to share. And, of course, our public service links to the community. I might as well just do it now. We've got our good friends at Bailey House over there between Auburn and Placerville. It's a historic house there that's being reconstructed. It's going to take about 3 million of those greenbacks to rebuild that wonderful house. It's a place that I was able to go into here about a month and a half ago and caught extraordinary amount of activity in this place, and not many people get to go in. And it's just a place that's really worth checking out. If you want to look into how you can help, send even a few bucks to them. http://www.baileyhouse.net, and that's B-A-Y-L-E-Y house.net to help those folks out. Also, my good friends at Journey Paranormal, I always read off for this one for them because they love this place, and if they love it, so do we. It's the Rolling Hills Paranormal Research Center. It was an insane asylum that was abandoned, and now it's converted into, this research center. It's so active. And the URL for that is http://www.rollinghillsprc.com. Give that a look, and, maybe pop them a little help. It's in New York State. And speaking of that, New York State, we've got a show coming up that's going to be all about New York ghosts and New York ghost hunting, and we're setting up to get guests in for that. And we think we may have Sal from I'm trying to remember the name of it now. I cannot remember the name.
You're talking about the Shanley?
The Shanley, that's it.
Yeah, he's a friend of mine. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're looking at getting Sal in, and we're also I have a couple of friends who live right out near Bailey House of all places, who have a home out in New York and who have had some pretty amazing experiences. I may have them on. So we got a lot going on, and, there's going to be some neat stuff happening. But let's talk about the paranormal news of the week. And, oh, my God, I overwrote it.
I have one more plug, if I may.
Yeah,
I would
what's
like
that?
To plug www.iamhaunted.com. It's a wonderful site. I am on staff on I Am Haunted, and I encourage you all to go check out the site and sign up. And if you like it, sign up for a membership. It's a great place to go.
Well, I'm going to kind of wing this since I put my EVP notes, I overwrote the stories. It's been one of those weeks. Anyway, so what we're going to do is we're going to just wing it, and I'm getting pretty good at that. Looks like we got some paranormal news, though, to report about. The travel website asks for paranormal and debunking. So let's take a look at this. This is out on beachconnection.net. Travel website asks for paranormal and debunking. Portland, Oregon, a new travel site for the United States recently launched by beachconnection.net, is asking for the public to submit their tales of the paranormal from either their hometown or from their own travels. It's also set to stir a bit of controversy and tension, as it's not only asking for tales of the paranormal, but it wants to hear from skeptics who would like to or can debunk those tales.
Mm-hmm.
So evidently, it's kind of a neat idea. I think it's a great idea to go out and travel. It's travelparanormal.com. Has recently hit the net with a subheading of Paranormal Fun for the Traveler and the Skeptic. Will feature articles written by staff, but mostly submissions from travelers, residents, and skeptics with an interest in the esoteric subject.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are worth a, you know what, maybe I'm glad I did overwrite those notes, because these guys are worth a show.
Well, you know, right down there in Portland, I've had a couple of investigations down there. In fact, there's a place down there that is so haunted that the third floor is actually under lock and key because of the enormous amount of activity. Now, these places are right down by the Willamette River, and they are actually built over the Shanghai tunnels.
Whoa.
And it's enormously haunted, and I actually know the proprietors down there, and I can get investigations at these places, and it's well worth it.
Well, sounds like something to follow up on. I'm still looking here too at these.
Oh, it's ugly down there. I'm seriously.
What's weird is this travel paranormal site that opens up and it says it's forbidden, and it looks like the site. They've got the site advertised in this story from Portland, but their website appears to be down, so I'm hoping it's just not some, you know, permanent thing going on. But anyway, still,
maybe they didn't pay the bill.
A very interesting story. We'll pop the story up on the website during the break and get some of those things connected.
Sure.
Let's see. I know how you feel about Ghost Hunters International, so I won't put that on. There's a story about that in here.
Roger that.
Yeah, you're like a paranormal cop, aren't you? I can see that. There's actually some paranormal cop websites. Let's see.
I just might be.
Shreveport Times.
Shreveport, Louisiana.
I don't know about that. Louisiana Spirits. Looks like they're having some sort of an event here. I'll just read off what I got here. Supernatural comes alive in convention. Crystal Vines has had a fascination for the spooky, mysterious world of the supernatural. Oh, my God. You know, Shaggy. Yeah, Spooky-ooby. For as long as she can remember, I just always liked the scary movies and books. I even did my high school term paper on the paranormal, said this Converse native who now lives in Frierson. And it... She ended up joining the Northern Chapter of the Louisiana Spirits Paranormal Investigations Group 3 years ago, and now she's the case manager and co-director of the chapter.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, they've got, she's reading on about this, and evidently they're having quite the convention here. So for our good little friends that are listening out there, I'm going to go ahead and pop this story from the Shreveport. If you go out to ShreveportTimes.com, you'll see this, but I'm just going to go ahead and pop that out there. That's a good one. God, I had such good stories, too. I'm going to go ahead and, meanwhile, I'm doing that, why don't you jump up and down and start making... here we go.
You want me to do that for real, John?
No, don't. I'm just teasing you. Here we go. Paranormal investigators to study university ghosts. This was one of the stories I had that I overwrote. So I was able to save one. Slippery Rock, Pennsylvania. Emma isn't a student at Slippery Rock University in western Pennsylvania. She's a ghost. Now, paranormal investigators are headed to the state school to try to find out, you know, all about this apparition. Professor
uh-huh.
David Skeel says many people believe that the university theater is haunted by the spirit of a former trustee who died in 1970. Investigator John Lewis said his ghost hunters will try to capture Emma on infrared, digital, and film cameras, and they'll be spending this Saturday night in the supposedly haunted theater. So evidently their investigation is going on right now. So guys, wish you well. Hope you catch Emma. We'll go ahead and put this on. This is on the NewsNet 5 website out of Cleveland, Ohio. And that, let's see if we can find out one more thing. Oh, here we go.
I wonder
here's
why
they
don't,
your area.
I wonder why they don't set up cameras for 24 hours and try to catch this activity.
I don't know either. As a matter of fact, I was at Radio Shack of all places today and saw an interesting little DVR that captures video of anything when motion occurs, and thought, you know, that's a neat device to put in the kit. That is just something that, you know, you could just set up real fast and leave running for however long you wanted, even a week, in a place like that. So the technologies are cheap. It's only like $125 or so to buy this unit, and I'm thinking that, you know, later on after I pay my taxes, I might just pick up one of those to toss in for, you know, places like, that hotel that we were at lunch at or breakfast.
I thought you were going to buy me something pretty.
I'll buy you something pretty. Well, it is actually red-colored. It's a red-colored DVR, so it's pretty. Well, here we go. Here's something at Seattle. Become a paranormal hunter at the Seattle Museum of the Mysteries.
Oh, no, don't. No, stop. Okay, that's enough.
Oh, why? What's bad about that?
That's enough.
Really?
Anyways.
Oh, what's wrong with the paranormal Seattle Museum of the Mysteries?
I don't know.
Well, let's see. It's a sight to behold, located on Capitol Hills Broadway and filled with every type of unexplained occurrence. Washington State's only paranormal science museum is a cave of fascinating enigmas to explore. The museum has four Bigfoot casts, information on Washington crop circles. I didn't know you could have crop circles up there.
I think they got something on that Mount Rainier UFO thing, too.
Yeah, documentation on the 1947 UFO sighting over Mount Rainier, material on the Maury Island UFO puzzle, which was not, that wasn't long before that particular crash occurred, just prior to the Roswell crash. And not many people really know about that crash, but it's right there in your particular neck of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Discovery or UFO Hunters was out doing some work with that and did some excavation and found some evidence, but it wasn't conclusive.
Really?
My God. Barack Obama's first house in Seattle. I guess he lived in your area. Rare and never before seen photos of famous Seattle residents Bruce Lee and Francis Farmer and a set of Rhine cards to put your ESP ability to the test. So basically, it's a museum of the paranormal. It's not a haunted place per se, although it could be, with all these various famous dead people who are hanging out there. Kurt Cobain, Francis Farmer, Jimi Hendrix, and Bruce Lee, and Brandon Lee.
Well, Jimi Hendrix is buried in Renton, and Bruce Lee's buried in Seattle, so with his son, Brandon.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Bruce Lee's buried up there?
Oh, yeah. He's from here.
Have you ever done any work out there or around his area? I mean, with your particular group?
Mm-hmm. Went out there with a news crew.
Wow.
Yeah.
What did you pick up?
The cemetery that they're buried in is interesting. It's got a lot of the founding members of Seattle buried up there, and so he's Bruce Lee's grave is. It's interesting because it's a black slab, and it's kind of odd shaped, and then his son Brandon is, you know, of course, buried right next to him. So you go out there, and I don't believe you can be out there when it's closed. I don't believe they grant access to it. So there again, we out here we've had a lot of cemeteries that have been desecrated by idiots, and it makes it tough, you know. It really does.
Well, interesting.
When my friends come up to visit, I always take them out there and show them Jimi Hendrix's grave, and he's buried next to his grandmother, and Bruce Lee and his son Brandon, and out there in Seattle, and it's interesting the people that are, well, you know, we have a couple of famous people that are buried out here, not many, but a few.
Okay. Well, I'm going to, last item here is found an interesting reference. This is in our regular internet scan. Upcoming 2009 paranormal conferences around the country provide something for everybody. And what we have here is from the Examiner. Looks like the San Francisco Examiner. New paranormal conferences are popping all over, and there's something to satisfy everybody in the field. Today I'm featuring information about the ShadowCon in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, Ghost Stock in Salem, Massachusetts, and the Great Lakes Paranormal Convention in Eveleth, MI, which state's that, Mississippi? Probably Mississippi or Minnesota. So let's take a look here. Boy, the prices on some of these. ShadowCon.
You know, that's the thing about these conferences. With the economy the way it is today, I'm surprised anybody can even afford it.
Yeah, I'm surprised, too.
The prices they charge for these things is unreal.
Yeah, like this ShadowCon, www.shadowcon.info for scheduled details to purchase tickets. Mm-hmm. Be sure to buy soon because ShadowCon takes place March 27th through the 28th in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, home of the infamous Mothman incident, and tickets will sell out quickly. And they have an all-access pass for $250,
mm-hmm.
three-day pass for $75, a two-day pass for $55. Actually, that's getting more like it. I think they are, you know, it's just, you know how it is. They've always got the mixer type thing where you mix with the celebrities and you got to pay for it. And some of the folks that are going to be there are Shannon Sylvia, Keith Age, you know Keith, I believe, Robbie Thomas, Keith and Sandra Johnson, Brian Hanoi, and more. All sorts of seminars, a Mothman investigation, Haunted Kentucky, Spirits of the Bluegrass, sneak peek, a steak dinner, and Lowe's Inn investigation. So I guess they're going to investigate a Lowe's hardware store. Let's see. Good stock. What are they going to find? Made in China.
Here's a hammer and here's a nail. Ooh.
Oh, my goodness. So anyway, we've got Ghost Stock 2009 in Salem, Massachusetts. That's another paranormal enthusiast conference taking place in Salem, Massachusetts. And let me look at the date that's going to take place. April 16th through the 19th, 2009. This is evidently the seventh one of these, but the first six were held in Savannah, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, guests include David Schrader from Darkness at the Edge of Town Radio, Keith Age from Spook TV, Chris Fleming from the Biography Channel's Dead Famous, and Fiona Broom, author and psychic medium. Keynote speaker to be John Zaffis, the noted authority on demonic and malevolent hauntings. So that's one to look at, April 16th through the 19th. Ghost Stock, Ghostock, 2009. And
mm-hmm.
Great Lakes Paranormal, oh, it's Minnesota for sure. So Great Lakes Paranormal Convention beginning at 5 o'clock on July 24th, that's a Friday, at the Coates Hotel and Plaza in Eveleth, Minnesota.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a fairly quiet little convention from the looks of it.
You know what the problem with those conventions are? They're over on the right coast. They need to be on the left coast.
Yeah, I know. We need to get some guys out to the west side. So I'm going to be looking into some of these. But, you know, I mean,
so
I'll pick this up and talk.
If you pay like $200 to get in the door,
yeah.
I've got like another $500 for airfare. I've got another like $400 for a hotel. Uh-uh. It's not happening. I can't afford it.
I know. I mean,
can't afford that.
Well, it's going to be one of those things that I think with the way it's going, I think you're going to see the costs come down, and they'll just limit the scope and size of these. Like that first one, it had the various prices for the different day passes. So most people are just going to stay a day or two and leave, and they'll be out of there. So, but this one, particular one, again, here we go. Same bunch of folks: Brian Hanoi, Keith Age, Mark and Debbie Constantino, and I met them. They're pretty nice, and they're going to do some investigations of a very haunted location, but they're not going to talk about what that is. So evidently it's a mystery place. So anyway, that's We'll put this up. This is on the examiner.com website, so I'm going to just grab that and drag that to the little place I put.
Well, you know, yeah, so most, I think most of the people that they get at those conventions are like, you know, they're like, they're all from the right coast. They're not from the west coast or the left coast over here, where, you know, I don't know. I guess I probably shouldn't.
Hey, it looks like we got a caller from, I guess, 1111. I'm going to go ahead and answer this and see who we get. Hello, you're on the air.
I finally got into chat. Thank you very much. This is Carla.
Oh, you're welcome. Sorry about that. Yeah, we put the new chat room in, and I saw someone out there. I fired up the other. Oh, there she is. Hi, Carla. It's you.
MI is Michigan. I'm screaming Michigan.
I know, and I'm like going, well, I wasn't seeing it. I was so too busy reading the story, you know. It's been a really rough. This has been a rough
Minnesota.
Show. What's that?
You were saying Minnesota. You're saying MI. It must be Mississippi. I'm like, Michigan.
Oh, it's Michigan. Okay, I'm two-letter challenged today. After all, I tried to start the show, and it was I hung up on myself, and everything else went wrong.
Well
hey,
okay,
it's
now.
Good
I'm
to
in chat room, so that's okay. That's all I was calling for. How do I get in chat? I'm there now.
Yeah,
I
we got.
Get in.
Yeah, we changed the chat around. So I am going to just as a kind of a precaution, I'll just post the I'll fire up the regular chat that's in.
Well, Miss Carla.
Yes, Miss Cat.
Hi, Carla.
I wore my extra super absorbing depends this evening.
Oh, goodness gracious me. It's so good to have you here.
Oh, heavens, it's so good to have you here. Oh,
yeah. My ribs hurt the next day too bad. I mean, I really like it. But I sent a couple of this out to some friends, and I'm wondering if they're having a hard time getting in chat because I told them, you got to come to this one.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, thank you, Carla. You're so kind to us.
We'll just run them over to the Geist Rider Paranormal Shop.
Okay.
Queen and I are so happy to have you here. We're going to have it. We're going to have her here more often, yes.
Stop it.
She's selling English depends. Oh, yes.
I think I'm going to stop drinking water for the rest of the night.
You broke here on the West Coast. It was so hard to use your telephones. I hung up on myself.
That's so good. All right, I'm hanging up so I can get
okay.
Now I have to go to the bathroom first. I'll be back.
Okay.
All right, Carla.
Hey, bye. See you later.
See ya.
Okay, well, with that, what we're going to do is let's go ahead and take our break since everybody needs to go to the bathroom. And we're going to go ahead and move on into the whole ghost cops, paranormal, our whole theme show about police. And I'm going to ask that if anybody happens to know a police officer, anybody who happens to, you know, perhaps know of an incident of the paranormal with the police, wants to call in and talk about that experience, feel free to dial in to our number.
Oh, pick me. Oh.
Yeah, I'll pick you. Yeah, you know about all that stuff, so yeah, you're in. So anyway,
you done picked me.
Yeah.
You already
well,
picked me.
I'll pick you.
Me.
Okay. All right, so our call-in number for those who have not been picked yet is 646-478-0377, and we'll be
That's
back
it.
In just a short time after I find the wonderful thing. I'm
Don't gonna, hang up on yourself.
I
again,
won't hang
please.
Up. I'm just going to hit the play button for this thing. I know, but as God is my witness, I will not hang up on myself again.
Oh, don't hang up on
oh,
yourself,
no.
child.
Okay, here we go. You'll like this one.
Was dumb, but we was ready to fight. The man was playing, man, them gear was down.
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello?
I'm having one of those nights. I didn't think that would be
I can see that, and, you know, that's okay.
What a great song, Lerner says. Hi, Lerner. Yeah, that is Who Called the Cops? I'll have to find some more on that, and I'll post that out on the website. So, yeah, I ran right next door to get a cup of coffee, and thought that thing wouldn't play that fast, but evidently it did. Cat.
John.
How are you? Oh,
well, I'm doing just wonderful, dear.
Okay,
and yourself?
Well, guess what? We got a call from somewhere in area code 936, so let's go ahead and take it. If I can click that.
Let's do it.
Come on. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
I'm not in 936. I'm just using 936.
Okay. Well, it looks like a 936, but we'll, from now on, when I see a 936, I'm going to say maybe it's somebody using 936.
There you go.
Okay. Who we got?
My name is Thomas.
Hi, Thomas.
How are you guys tonight?
Pretty good. Yeah, just having the challenging night with the broadcast console and getting back to the show in time after I play the music.
Seems like everybody's having problems with the BTR time.
Oh, I don't know what it is today, but, you know, I'm just running a little bit off all the whole morning here. So, anyway, what's on your mind today?
You were wanting us to call in about our experiences with the paranormal and law enforcement?
Yeah, exactly. So you got a story.
I've got a couple of stories.
Okay, let's talk.
When I was 20 years old, I worked in a gas station on the northeast side of Houston in a small town. And in the woods behind this gas station, there was a cemetery that I'd actually been out to. And the gravestones were marked in the middle to late 1800s. And the reason I went out there is because there were times at night around between 3 and 4 in the morning I would hear what sounded like children laughing and playing out there in that part of the woods.
Oh, my God.
And I wasn't the only one. Where law enforcement comes into this is there people in that neighborhood could hear it as well, and they called the police department out there, and they could come by and ask me, did you hear anything out in the woods? I said, yeah, it sounded like children are playing. So they would go out in the woods, and, of course, they wouldn't find anything. And the third time they came out, while I was working there, they brought two German Shepherds with canine units. And they didn't find any broken limbs on trees or bushes, nothing disturbed, didn't look like anybody had been out there in months or even years. And the dogs were very afraid and wanted to come out of the woods.
Wow.
Wow.
And I had heard what sounded like children playing in the woods that night when the police officer showed up and asked me what I heard, and of course I told them. And they left from my gas station off into the woods with flashlights and two canine units. And they came back, and those dogs had their tails tucked, and they didn't look very happy at all.
Wow. I've heard that reaction with animals before, but to hear a couple of canine, you know, actual police officer dogs, which are officers themselves, you know, that's pretty amazing.
I don't think you can take those kind of instincts out of a dog, though. I mean, if they sense a presence, it doesn't really matter how much training they have. I believe they would still react instinctively and not want to go.
Yeah,
well, the thing you have to the realization I've made about children from the age of 5 to 7 who have ghost-type experiences or animals in general is that they don't know how to lie.
Yeah,
they don't have any inhibitions. I mean, I'm sure everyone listening, and you two on the line here, have been victimized by a small child who said exactly what they heard or saw when you were trying to cover something up from the parent.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, they say things that they see and that they hear, and they don't know. You know, they haven't been taught by an adult what is real and what is imagination, so everything is real to them.
Right.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, children, their filters are just not up. I mean, we both ourselves, I mean, Kat, I think you had it happen too, and me. just as children, I can remember seeing things that I can't see today, but I remember the experiences and people, you know, in my own family, it was an accepted ability. So, you know, the whole family had the gift of sight, and it was encouraged. So really, I kind of wish it stayed that way so I could keep seeing them, because now I have to use EVP equipment to go listen to them, and I've only had a few sightings since. But I do think children, you know, the thing that amazes me is it's such a prevalent thing now with the paranormal that children are, known to see and hear these things, that it should just be accepted on, as an immediate possibility. You know, but even now, I mean, there are parents, though, who just are threatened by it and then just try to just make it go away. And unfortunately, the child's going to continue seeing these things.
Right. But that's where the inhibitions come in, because the parent says, no, that's not real. That's imagination. You didn't really see that. You just thought you did.
Yeah. And so the brain responds by putting in filters, and then boom, suddenly you have a child that, was sensitive that now no longer is. Yeah, but what's amazing to me is the fact that you independently corroborated these stories of children being heard in this graveyard, I don't know how many calls you must have gotten. You said you had three different calls that you were aware of?
Yeah, there were three times the police came out because of calls from the neighborhood where someone had heard something out that way in the woods, and they thought, something was going on, so they called the police. And it was one of the police officers used to come in and get coffee from me all the time, and he stayed that last time, and he said, "You going to tell anybody about this?" I said, "Well, if I do, they bring up your name." He said, "Good, because I'm going to tell them all, everyone I talk to that says anything to me about it, that you're full of BS." He said, "This is your little secret and mine." He said, "There are so many things that happen in this town that you're not aware of, and this isn't the only place." So I don't know what else he had experienced or seen while he was a police officer, but it didn't surprise or shake him up any.
Yeah, it's funny because my father, who is, has undergone a couple of strokes in the last, 2 years. We've had many times that we've been to emergency with seizures and different things, and so we got to know the hospital staff up at the local hospital up near Placerville very well. And it came to pass that they found out I was in a paranormal investigation, and a nurse quietly pulled my mother aside when I had stepped out after there had been some discussion about this, and so she said, "You wouldn't believe the things we see out here, especially down in the lower floors of this hospital." And my mother said, "Well, what?" And they started talking about the things that happened near the morgue and in some of the lower administrative areas of the hospital. And my mother said, "Well, is that something we could talk about?" "Oh, no. We're under orders not to talk about that. No one's to know in the public." Well, it just seems like the whole thing with UFOs, same kind of thing. Pilots see these things all the time, but it's it's accepted kind of protocol. You don't talk about it. So I'm glad you called in, because I had a feeling that this probably happens more often than not in most police departments. There's got to be well-known haunts that these guys have on file, or at least if you could find somebody who will talk to you who can really tell you where the action's really happening, because these guys are everywhere. They're not just hitting a few local spots. They're hitting places all over that you wouldn't even think to look.
Well, and they're out there 24/7, whereas most people are, in a slumber at nighttime.
Yeah, so it would be interesting to see. Maybe that's actually a good place to start investigating, is check some of the police blotter logs. A lot of the stuff's online now. You could actually start, seeing what they're being called out to, and see what, maybe read the telltale signs that they investigated a haunt, found nothing, and just threw their hands up, and maybe they don't. Once they get the same call three or four times, they start ignoring it,
There's another woman that I talk to on a regular basis that was a police officer in a small town in Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
And she related a story to me last year about a building that she was being regularly called to when she first went to work for the police department. And it was an old building built in the late 1800s that was abandoned. It was a three-story building. And there would always someone would always call about a light being on the third floor.
Yeah.
And she would, you know, she'd arrive, and of course she could see the light bulb on in the window on the third floor. It was at just such an angle that she could, you know, see it lit up from its fixture in the ceiling.
Yeah.
And, of course, she'd go around the perimeter and check it, and everything was locked. There was no reason why this light should be on, but it would happen, you know, two or three times a month. There would be a call that a light was on in that building, and one of the senior officers met her there one night. And he said, come around back. I want to walk back here with me. I want to show you something. So they walked around back, and he shined his light on where the power connection was for the building, and the wires were cut.
Oh, my goodness.
There was no electricity at the building, but they could clearly see that light bulb on in the third floor. And it would only be, you know, two or three times a month that light bulb would come on.
So, and how often was this to be seen? Quite regularly?
Yeah, two or three times a month.
Sounds a lot like what you and I...
What we saw at the hangman.
That's exactly what I was going to say. We had...
Yeah.
But I actually got a physical response to me, you know, just saying, gee, it would be neat if we saw a light up in that second, you know, floor.
Because I remember I grabbed you and I was like, John, look.
I turned around and looked, and there was a light on the second floor, and I went, oh, my God, she was doing the same thing.
I shined my flashlight up there, and I hit a wall, so it wasn't coming from the back of the building. It was just in that room.
Yeah, it was in the room. So we wanted to hunt in there a long time, but it sounds to me like that place, there just has got to be some kind of presence in there. Was it well known to be haunted with the light that you're talking about in that room?
Well, the people that weren't sure what it was, the police officers thought it was a haunt, but they just left it alone because there was no power to the building, and the next morning the light bulb would be off.
I wonder if in any of the police training guides if there's anything said about this stuff, you know, where, there's got to be something in the manuals. I mean, they've even got in some of the fire department manuals, of all things, what to do in case of an alien landing. And that, I mean, and that's the God's truth. They actually have this in fire department guides on, you know, how to handle different kinds of emergencies. So I tend to think that police have, this being such a common thing, that there must be protocols.
Well, there's another story that was related to me last year from another person I trust, covering two areas of the paranormal.
All right.
He's into Bigfoot research, and his wife is into ghost hunting.
Okay.
So they took a group of people to an old cemetery, and this is up in North Texas, that was known to have very old gravestones, and they were going to try to get an EVP. And when they got out of the vehicle and the other people got out and they started into the cemetery, his wife looked over at him and said, "This looks like Bigfoot territory, and if we have an encounter, I'm going to kill you later." Well, they went in there, and... You know, they set up their equipment and they started their recorder, and they said, "Is there anyone that would like to say anything?"
Yeah.
And when this person said that, there was a call of a whippoorwill about 50 feet away, which is normal.
Yeah.
But the husband decided to make the call of a loon, which was answered 10 seconds later by a barred owl call. So he walked over and he picked up a good-sized branch, and he made one tree knock. And when he did, all hell broke loose. That's when howling and roaring started coming from the woods just 50 feet away, and rocks and branches started being thrown in on them.
Oh, joy.
And
wow.
the ghost hunters were all got in a huddle together, not knowing what was going on. There were, of course, hairy folks in the woods around this cemetery that wanted these people out of the cemetery. And they could hear calls coming from behind them across the road, and there was stuff going on, you know, aside from the rocks and the sticks coming in, there were calls and hoots and growls and things, you know, within 50, 60 feet of them. And on this little asphalt road that the cemetery is off of, somebody was coming over the hill at a pretty good clip. And as they crested the hill, they locked up their brakes trying to stop. And they all heard boom, like the vehicle hit something pretty big. And the truck sat there for just a couple of seconds, and then it burned rubber getting out of there. And then there was a very loud call from across the street, and all activity around them ceased. So they're gathering up their things, getting their wits about them, and he decided to head up to the road, and a couple of people went with him to see if there was any blood or marks or anything on the road to see what this guy
right.
hit.
Yeah.
And that's when a sheriff and an ambulance arrived. Here's the law enforcement tie-in.
Yeah.
Some the person that had apparently hit one of the Bigfoot had called in saying he hit something, wasn't sure what it was, thought it might have been human, but he wasn't sure, and he didn't stick around because it was big. And he hit it with his truck and called the police department.
Wow.
Whoa.
And so the police found nothing and basically wrote it off to either they thought the guy was drunk or smoking something. And
well, the people that were coming out of the cemetery corroborated the story that they heard his wheels screeching and he heard his truck impact him with something. But they were so far back into the cemetery they didn't know what he had hit. So they corroborated that part of the story, and, of course, the skid marks were on the asphalt there from where he came down the hill at 50 miles an hour and had to slam on his brakes and still ended up hitting whatever it was in the road.
So there
Did they find any blood or anything?
No, none.
Wow.
Well,
I was going to say, if they found any blood, they could take a DNA sample and find out what it was, but without any blood.
Well, you have to figure with him locking up his brakes, he'd probably gotten down to somewhere between 20 and 30 miles per hour. So it's not enough to really kill anything. I mean, I've hit dogs doing 20 miles per hour before, and it just knocked them around and made them silly before.
Right.
Yeah,
big dogs, but
800 pounds is gonna probably even barely feel that as a love tap. I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, you'd
yeah.
be calling your insurance company saying you hit a deer or something with the damage that would do.
Oh, I hit a Bigfoot. Let's get real.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
Yeah, I could see that being called into the local State Farm office. I mean, good Lord. Well, what other story did you have?
No, that's really it. I mean, there's one on Monster Quest about the guy that hit a Bigfoot with his Taurus, and it totaled it. It totaled his car. He hit it so hard, and the ambulance and the police, of course, showed up for that, and they tracked blood out through the woods off the road, and they could hear something moving in the woods, but they never could get any closer than 20 to 30 feet. It kept moving, and they couldn't get anywhere near it, and, of course, they couldn't see it because the brush and the weeds and the trees were pretty thick in that area.
Right.
Too bad they didn't have the sense to get to, again, the blood samples like what Kat was saying.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
That was his story, and it's on a Monster Quest episode. You can go to, you know, the History Channel and go back to their archives and watch their episodes. But he actually hit one with a Ford Taurus and totaled his car.
Well, I'll be darned.
Hmm.
Well, we thank you for calling in with all these stories, and we'll definitely check that out. I'll go ahead and put the link to that. I'm taking the, Taurus. I'm going to write this down, Taurus.
For real.
Monster Quest website.
Make sure your pen works this time, John.
I got a fresh pen. It's of all everything else, it's broken tonight, but my pen is
working. I love your pens. They don't work. I'm trying to write with it.
If I may make a suggestion, I gave up using a pen or a pencil and paper. I just open a notepad in Windows and type it all down and then save it with a name.
The trouble is I got all these windows open, my friend, and I have enough troubles with that, and I find it's easier for me with show notes just to write it down on a blank piece of paper and transcribe it right after. But Well, we do thank you for coming aboard and sharing some of those stories with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking my call.
Okay.
No, hey, anytime, man.
Hey, right, take care. Bye.
Bye. I just use a crayon, John, you know.
I'm just lucky if I can keep the show running with on these challenging nights like this. But,
oh, hell, you're doing fine.
Let's see what we got. I'm going to go back here and pop up the...
Well, then, of course, you know, I have my stories, so...
Yeah, why don't you go into your story while I'm getting reset here? I mean, that was interesting, though. I mean, the whole tie-in with, especially North Texas, having those things happen, and I'm sure the police see a lot of that kind of activity out that way.
I think it's interesting that they went out there and the leaves and the branches hadn't even been disturbed, but yet there was children. So I'm thinking maybe they should set up some kind of recording devices to try to catch this on an EVP.
Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting to start thinking about when you go out, if you run your own paranormal group like we do, start, you know, getting kind of not only a map of the area, but take a look at some of the businesses and different things that surround or are near known haunts, and then maybe just kind of casually go in and broach the subject and see what you might pick up.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously this kind of thing probably happens a lot more often than people think that you have.
Kind of like what we did. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, what's your story that you've got?
Well, you know, from the police blotter news desk, doodaloo, doodaloo, doodaloo.
Okay. That's our
I don't know Morse code and me are not friends.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, back on February 21st of 1977, in Chicago, there was a fire up on the upper floor of an apartment building, and the fire department broke down the door and found a mattress in the middle of the floor that was on fire.
Okay.
And they lifted the mattress to discover a woman's body, and it appeared that she had been, she had been stabbed in the chest, and it appeared that she had been raped. So they contacted the police, who really didn't have anything to go on, other than a note left on the table that said, need tickets for AS. And that's the only clue that they had, and the case eventually just went cold, and the police were just baffled by this murder because the fire had destroyed all of the fingerprints, and of course back in 1977 they didn't have the technology that they have today.
He's a
Chicago detective. His name is Joe Stakula. He got a phone call from a woman who was the woman who died's name was Teresita Bassa, and she worked in a hospital with a friend of hers who had contacted Detective Joe, and Joe went over to her and her husband's house, and she recanted a story to the detective about Teresita coming to her in a dream when she was asleep in the hospital. She was taking a short nap, and Teresita came to her and told her the name of the guy that had murdered her. And she went home and told her husband about it. And a couple weeks later, she was taking a nap, and her husband was trying to wake her up, and she actually answered him in a different voice and identified herself as Teresita Bassa, and told him he needed to call the police, and then asked him, you know, why nobody had called them as of yet, and proceeded to tell him that the evidence was that this guy who had killed her had stolen her jewelry. And they were relating this story to Detective Stakula, who was kind of wondering how to put this in a police report, you know?
Yeah.
So what eventually happened was, because of these two experiences that they'd had with Teresita, And with the detective's help, they identified Alan Showery of murdering her. He had gone over to fix her television set, had come back later and murdered her, made it look like a rape, covered her with her own mattress, and set it on fire. So he was arrested. They actually had Alan Showery's girlfriend bring the jewelry box into the police station and had some of Teresita's family members there to identify her jewelry and even identified a ring that Alan's girlfriend was wearing. And because of that evidence, they had arrested Alan Showery, and he's now doing life. But the detective, they interviewed him, and he said that none of this would have come to light. They were cold. They had no clue where to proceed next.
Yeah, it wouldn't.
And if Teresita had not come through to a friend of hers, none of this would have happened.
Wow.
They didn't know who A.S. was. They didn't know who the tickets were for. So he started following the evidence trail, and that led him right to Alan. So kudos to Teresita for coming forward to identify her own murder.
Yeah, and actually getting help, you know, then going to the police. I mean, it's just in picking somebody. I think it was she picked the woman she worked with.
Right.
Yeah.
The second story that I have is even more fascinating than the first. It is actually from your neck of the woods, Oh Dear John.
Oh, yeah, I know the one you mean, up off Highway 50.
Back on June 6th of 1994, a woman by the name of Christine Skubish was driving with her 3-year-old son, Nick. They were driving up Highway 50, which they were headed for Carson City, Nevada. Now, the coroner guesses that at about 2 a.m., Christine fell asleep at the wheel.
Yeah.
They went off the embankment on Highway 50 and crashed into headfirst into a tree. This is off of the place they crashed at is called Bullion Bend.
Yeah, and I know the place.
Okay. Now,
probably 40 miles from here.
A few days later, Deborah Hoyt and her husband were driving up the same road. And Deborah turned around, looked to her right, and on the side of the road, there was laying a naked woman. She had her hand up under her head, and her other hand was up over her head. And what happened was she told her husband about it, and they went a little ways up further and stopped to call the police because they figured it was either somebody that was murdered or it was a joke. For somebody to carjack their car when they stopped. So they pulled up to the phone booth, and she immediately called 911. They immediately dispatched the El Dorado County Sheriff's Department to search for this body, and they could not find it anywhere.
Yeah.
So a couple days, so the next day, Deputy Rich Strasser from the El Dorado Sheriff's Office drove back up to the site, and what happened was he found a child's tennis shoe, a very small child's black tennis shoe laying on the road. And he looked over the embankment, and he saw the car.
Yeah.
And he went down there.
Pulled off like a can opener and taken it
yeah.
off.
Christine was dead. She'd been dead for about 5 days. And her son, Nick, was curled up next to her. And the deputy thought that the child would not be breathing, that he would be in full rigor and this would be case closed. It was a car accident. When, in fact, Nick was still alive, so he immediately called for paramedic and an extra trooper backup. So it's interesting because Deputy Strasser, when he got to the hospital, the doctors told him that in the condition that he was in, he only had another hour to an hour and a half to live.
Yeah.
So this would be a mother's love for her child. When they interviewed Deputy Strasser about the case, he said, "We don't have any way to explain what happened. We only know what the witnesses told us and what we found as a result of that call."
Yeah.
So the car had crashed into the tree, and it was over the embankment.
Many
cars had driven by it and not even seen it because there was no skid marks. She just went off the side.
And if it had been that many days, it probably would have. There would have been thousands of people going to Lake Tahoe,
mm-hmm.
and so literally driving by this sort of a thing. And we've had many accidents like that in this neck of the woods. I mean, I live in Shingle Springs, which is just a matter of 40 miles from the spot in question that you're talking about.
Right.
We've had many other similar cases of people. They know they're off the road someplace, but it takes an amazing amount of work to find them. The Sierras, especially at that altitude, for that child to have survived 5 nights out in the open like that, the temperatures, even in the summer, can get down into the 20s and 30s at those elevations, 7,000 to 8,000 feet. So
right.
It's just an amazing story. I fully believe that woman, cared enough about that child to do whatever it took, and her etheric body made that appearance just to get the attention.
Well, they were saying that Nick had survived 5 days in the blazing heat and 5 days and 5 nights in the freezing cold, but as long as he had his mom, he was all right. So it makes me wonder if he didn't see her talking to him. She didn't comfort him for those 5 days.
Yeah,
because Deputy Strasser said she was seat belted into her car, fully dressed, when they found her.
Yeah.
So there's no way that she climbed up the hill, stripped off her clothes, laid there, got up, went back down to her car, got dressed, and strapped herself in. It's just, he's a trained police officer, and he's trained to observe, and this is what he saw.
Yeah.
So, Deborah Hoyt is a credible witness. She's not crazy. She just said what she saw. There was a woman's body laying by the side of the road.
Well, that said, that's just amazing. I mean,
it is.
Well, we've got roughly just under a half hour left in the show. Let's go ahead and take our break, and then when we come back, we'll go through some of the other cases that we've got on the main website, and then we'll wind it down. So let's go ahead and take a break here, Miss Cat.
10-4, good buddy.
Roger, and here we go. I think it's a song you'll like. Here we go.
Yay!
Thank you.
woman reporting paranormal ghosty coming through the roof of her house down the road. It's a code 1021.
Oh, no!
Copy. 10-4.
10-4.
Roger. Well, hey, guess what? We're rolling into this police thing tonight, and boy, have we got some stories here. Not only do we have stories about the police, walking into cases, but we got a story about a policeman being the case, which is on the Wayne website called the Lilydale Police Officer. And this is dated from February 27th of 2007. And it's called the Lilydale Police Officer. So here we go. My brother picked me up from night work one night. It was a Friday night, so we were getting ready to hit the clubs and to meet some friends. To hype us, he cranked up the volume and turned on the bass in the car, and we were dancing and, being really rowdy. And the next thing I knew, red and blue lights were flashing behind us from a really far distance. My brother saw it too, so he lowered the sound and hit the gas to get away from the cop. And within the blink of an eye, the police car caught up with us already, and he pulled us over for loud music. I was too afraid of hearing a lecture from my parents that I didn't pay attention to the cop. My brother was swearing the entire time, for sure that our parents were going to take away our driving privileges. Well, we didn't go out that night, and we kept us away from our parents. I worked my butt off to pay for that ticket, and that Friday when I got my paycheck, we headed right away to the courthouse to pay for the ticket. When we got there to the front desk, the lady said we could pay for it with her, and I was pulling out the money to pay for the ticket, and then suddenly the lady was laughing. She said I didn't need to pay for it because the police officer who gave us the ticket had been dead for a long time on Lilydale Drive. She said there's a lot of people who come to come in from time to time to pay for tickets issued by this deceased officer, but she still gets amused from it. This is Lilydale in the Twin Cities, Minnesota area. Has anybody heard about this or had any experiences related to this officer? So you've got a guy who doesn't know enough to quit being on the job. He's freaking
good
dead.
Good grief.
I know. So I was just amazed when I found that story and just thought, better check, this, kind of poke the officer, kind of like Egon did when he was on the second floor in Ghostbusters. Poke the guy to see if he's real.
We have a similar story out here in Seattle, but it involves a bellhop. It is not a police officer.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, it's a real interesting story, but doesn't have anything to do with our topic. So, my neighbor, I used to have a neighbor that was a state patrolman. And I was talking to him one day, and I asked him, because he knows I'm a paranormal investigator, and I asked him if he's ever seen anything strange. And he related to me that one of the things that the police officers, they chat amongst themselves, of course.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the places out here, like where you live on 50, they will be driving and they'll see somebody walking along the side of the road. And they'll immediately stop and try to help this person.
Yeah.
And they just disappear. And they've actually caught these people on their video cameras, but it's not released to the public.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Because they honestly just, they can see them walking along the road, but as soon as they stop and get out to see, did you leave the road? Are you okay? It's not really legal to walk along the side of a freeway.
Yeah, that actually leads into one of the links. Now, I can't play this. Per se here on the audio for our show. But I think it's something you should take a look at. It's on YouTube. It's a video link that we have on the website. It's a ghost car in a police chase. And
that thing's weird.
I'll go ahead and copy the link, and I'm going to paste it in both the chat rooms. And see, make sure that everybody can get to it.
And right. The funny thing about that video that I was thinking about it just seems to be more credible because it's off of a police camera.
Yeah, there would be no reason for them to really go. I mean, they're not given to faking evidence, you know.
I mean, you know what I mean.
Kind of gets them in trouble if they do, you know. But the thing that was amazing was when you actually watch that video, and I watched it many times to try to catch, was there any potential, you know, tampering with this video, and it didn't look like it. This car was being chased by the police, and you could actually, you know, it was responding to the police chasing it. This guy turns into this, the police were, you could hear the police radio saying, oh, it's a dead end, we got him. The guy accelerates and runs right through a fence, and they figure they're going to go right behind him and continue on, and the fence is still up. This car drove through the fence. It drove through the fence, and the fence stayed up. It drove through a chain-link fence, and this fence was, like, completely intact. And it left you. You keep playing this over and over again because you're going, how the hell did that happen? It's just... And that's the only explanation, is that they were chasing a phantom car with this driver in it, who you could actually see the driver at one point when the car turned to try to evade them, and you saw this driver pass by. And if you look at the link on our website, I've actually got a picture of a still frame of this person in the car.
He looks like he's made out of glass.
Yeah, it's extremely weird. It's one of the more unique videos I've ever seen out of a police chase. It's just amazing. So, you know, definitely worth your time to check it out. And also know that, by the way, on all our links, we'll post that also on the GRI, not the GRI site, because we're already out there, but on the Blog Talk, we'll put it in the Blog Talk blog. So if anybody playing this in archive, just go ahead and look there and you'll find it. But it's just an amazing, amazing video. But we have one more here, maybe actually a couple. But we have one here of a phantom inmate, speaking of police, but more along the lines of a prison. So here's a story by someone from October 22nd of last year. In 2007, at the facility I work in, we had a suicide. A young inmate hung himself in his cell and was unable to be resuscitated. The coroner's report would list the time of death on the way to the hospital by suffocation or more general by lack of oxygen. In the short amount of time the inmate had, he managed to crush his larynx with a bed sheet made into a rope, so no matter what help he was being given, nothing could revive him from his goal of death. I know that this is a very common thing amongst prison settings and is seldom remembered years later. Some say ghosts have unfinished business, and that's why they hang around. I only write this because I knew the inmate and the fellow officers who, knowing me, brought the story to my attention. Bear with me while I try and lay the scene and the occurrence as best I can remember. Several officers in the housing units where the inmates were housed with this particular inmate was in the mental health dorm of the maximum confinement unit where I used to work. The housing unit is a two-story unit with individual cells, housing at the most two inmates per cell. Mental health inmates there were housed alone. Only trained officers are allowed to work in these units, meaning that they have some degree of knowledge about mental health, human behavior, and that these folks have a calm demeanor. So I'll just skip ahead here. During a count, Officer Jones was checking all the cells and noticed that in cell number 10 that an inmate was standing in the cell looking out the window towards the stairs. Officer Jones checked his clipboard to see which inmates were being housed in the cell, cell being as there were two inmates asleep in their bunks and one standing. He recognized the names and knew both, but did not recognize the inmate standing, observing the sky so intently. He called down to Officer Smith and asked who the third inmate was in cell number 10. Officer Smith checked his computer and logs and was told Officer Jones that there were only two inmates assigned to the cell. Officer Jones then went down to the officer's desk and began looking through the head sheet, which shows all inmates' names in a mugshot photo, and the inmate in question could not be found and found on the sheet, so both officers decided they needed to check the cell. On arrival at the cell door, they both only noticed the two inmates still asleep in their bunks, and the third was nowhere to be found. They opened the cell door, checked the walls, vents, and anywhere else a tunnel could have been dug to no avail, and Officer Smith then asked for a description of the inmate that Officer Jones had seen. Officer Jones described a slender-built, medium-height black male, possibly in his late teens or early 20s. they had several inmates fitting that description, so they went cell by cell and checked every bunk. All the inmates were accounted for and all asleep in their bunks. So a few nights later, they were telling the story. Officer Jones was telling the story to a fellow officer who stopped by the zone to get some coffee and chew the fat. And the officers thought it was funny that full-grown men could still believe in such fairy tales and proceeded to poke fun at the officers and the ghost in question. When all the officers present were talking about this, they suddenly noticed a black transparent cloud move from the lower staircase, linger for a few seconds, and then enter a supply closet. They each said that as the object moved, the lights would dim, but the wall and brick could still be seen through the dark smoke. The next night, they noticed the black transparent cloud in the visitation area, or black transparent cloud in the visitation area on the upper tier of the housing unit, moving through the rooms one by one, and then it would descend the stairs and enter the supply closet. So it goes on. But basically, this is a repeat haunt going on in a prison where it was pretty demonstrable that it was this young black man who had taken his life. So just imagine that. Imagine if you were a prisoner in a cell and you've got a phantom inmate staying in the same cell with you.
Especially if it had like a, because we've both been on investigations where things get a little unnerving and your first instinct is to step out of it. But what happens if you can't?
Oh, God, Carla's in there, chew the fat. Ew, I wonder who's fat.
Oh,
sorry.
God.
Ew.
No.
Okay, we're going to do one last case here. Police baffled by paranormal activity in a British pub. Oh, goodness gracious me. We have the police.
Oh, my God, there's problems at the pub.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Oh, my God.
Talk about this British thing. Anyway, British police responding to a call about a possible break-in at a pub in northern England on Monday found themselves in the middle of a ghoulish riddle. Officers arrived at the Low Valley Arms pub near Barnsley in South Yorkshire, 250 miles north of London, after being told that the alarm had been set off. But instead of finding any signs of robbery, they were faced with a shaken landlord convinced he had encountered a ghost with half a face missing in the ladies' washroom. Though they saw no ghoul, described as a woman in her flowing white gown, officers were shocked to find the toilets flushing themselves, said Inspector John Bowler of the South Yorkshire Police. Pub landlord Roger Froggett, 55, and his wife Catherine, aged 49, moved in a year ago and said they had seen nothing before despite rumors of a resident specter. Quote, I heard the alarm go off for a second time and went into the pub and all of the television screens had turned themselves on, the pub owner said. I went to check the rest of the pub and standing in the woman's lavatories was a woman with half her face missing. I was petrified. Officers found no signs of forced entry and were left quite scared after witnessing the apparitions of the toilets flushing themselves, Bowler added. Since the ghost story became public, the pub has become the talk of the town, attracting everyone from mediums to a national television film crew determined to catch a glimpse of the mystery woman should she appear again. Despite their shock, the Froggetts said that they have no plans to leave their village pub. So here we go again. I mean, this is just yet another case, but internationally. And you begin to wonder, just how often this occurs all over.
And it's also interesting that, there's a lot of places that, it's funny that I've encountered anyways, and I'm sure we both have, establishments either thrive on the fact that they're haunted or they're repelled by it.
Yeah, and this appears to be one where I hope it's a real case. I mean, because if this were to turn out to be some sort of, deal where they made it up and they're taking advantage, that could be a real problem. So,
you have to wonder if they're making it up. A lady with half of her face missing is pretty inventive.
Yeah, so that said, I mean, we've had a pretty amazing show here today. I mean, we're closing in on the last 5 minutes, so I thought what we'd do is sneak our EVPs in that we forgot to do.
Well, we always have interesting shows, John. We're just two interesting people.
Oh, yeah. So I feel that way, but and it seems like some people like us. Oh, goodness gracious, us GIP.
Oh, my God, that's just gross. Half a face is like half a rack of lamb that isn't cooked. Oh, my God.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to play one that we got just recently from the Fairplay Cemetery.
Right.
And when you and I first entered, we opened the gate, and there was a man named Greg, whose grave is off to the immediate left when you walk into Fairplay.
It was right by those garbage cans.
Yeah, and
that was crazy.
Yeah, go ahead and listen to this. So here we go. Did you hear that? I'm Greg.
Yeah, I'm Greg.
Yeah, so I'll play it one more time. Here we go. And what we think he's saying is, please help me out. I'm Greg. And we had another Class A that was just really good. Now, I'm going to boost this because you'll hear a woman's voice. And what it is Fairplay is not far from the town of Somerset. And we had a woman's voice appear here saying, my name's Somerset. So here we go. Did you hear that?
You know, and it sounds like a teenager. My name's Somerset.
Okay, I'm going to boost it to the maximum that we have available here. Here we go. I almost think it almost sounds like, now that I listen to it here, like Summer's Bee or something like that. But Somerset, that was what I was picking up when I had my other gear on. So it's still up in here, but you definitely heard a woman's voice there. So an interesting capture. And then the final one for the night is we have a low voice that was picked up in the Shingle Springs Cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll go ahead and play that, and I'm going to bop that down to 100%. And off we go. Did you hear that?
I have heard that before on the site, so I'm aware of it.
It's that we picked that up repeatedly, only in that location. And at first, I thought I was having recorder malfunctions, and it turned out to be something that I only get there in that particular cemetery. And I've had it on two other occasions. And on the day you and I were there, we picked up two EVPs with that same low quality. As a matter of fact, it was on that stone. Remember that man and his wife's stone where the damage had occurred that I was kind of freaking out
and
about?
And it was cracked in the middle?
Yeah, that was
when we
got the second one.
And it was chipped at the edge? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff you get when you just go out and you do a lot of EVP. You'll pick up some great evidence.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about what we captured, for me anyways, that I feel gratified for, is that I actually identified them and they answered me.
Yeah, and we've got a whole bunch of that on the website. So if you go out to the GRI website and look in the 2009 case logs, in the you'll actually see all of that, all those different EVPs that we had. Go through, and you can download them and listen to them, and and offer commentary too, because you may hear something.
You guys can actually hear me call these names, and you can hear these people get back to me.
Well, hey, we're coming in on the 2 minutes to the close of the show, so I'll tell you what. You know, it was a great police sort of night, and we want to thank you know, our call-in guest who called in from I believe Texas, and all
that's
our wonderful. We'll do the shout-outs here for everybody
Thomas.
Here. We got Carla out there, and we
Carla.
We had someone else from I'm trying to think of where the that person went. We had several people on board.
He's from England, and
yeah,
he
had to go. So we had a number of folks on, but we got Carla out there, and she's talking about chewing the fat. Is that cannibalism? Okay, never mind. So, Carla, we thank you for being in with us, and it was just a great show. Next week, let me pull up the show notes for next week.
Oh, it was White Noise.
Yeah, we had
White Noise Radio.
Yeah, so we had White Noise, and I'll go ahead and basically I got to pop this open here and see what we have coming up for next week. I think it's the Bigfoot show. Oh, the speed of browsers is just so amazing. Yeah,
I think it is the Bigfoot show.
Yeah, I think it's the Bigfoot show, and so
yeah.
we'll be having that on. And with that, I think we're going to go ahead and close. We're on the last 30 seconds, so I'm going to play a little something just kind of to have a little fun. And we'll see you next week.
Yes. You all have a pleasant evening.
Oh, that didn't play. Here we go.
Troops is filmed on location with the men of the Imperial Forces. All suspects are guilty, period. Otherwise, they wouldn't be suspect, would they?
So anyway, we're off the air, but for the archives, hey, everybody, we really appreciate everybody in our listening audience, and Kat and I just have a ball, you know, working with you guys. So that said, we're off the air, and we'll see you for our Bigfoot show next week.
That's right.
Okay. See you later, Kat.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.